To all the wanderers,
wanderers,
free thinkers,
and throwaway kids,
welcome to the dumpster fire.
Let's get dumpster diving.
Well, ready or not, here we go. We're back.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
The Viking.
Elsa.
Yes. Justin.
Hello.
We have a guest, Moneypenny.
Hello.
And me, your host, Brian. Back again, guys. A little sooner this time. We actually had a little less delay. We're recording on a different day. I think that's going to help.
Yeah.
Clint has graced us with a very cool bourbon today. Now, this is a Long Branch bourbon. This is made by Wild Turkey. I believe I can get it's 75% corn, 13% rye, 12% malted barley, 86 proof. Now, they mellow this in mesquite charcoal. So it's oak and mesquite charcoal. The guy that came up with this is Matthew McConaughey.
Really?
The actor. Yeah, his signature is on the bottle.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
When you guys get to drink this and we get to talk about how the flavor hits you, that's Matthew McConaughey right
that
there.
That makes sense. Yeah.
This is a Yule present from my wife on the recommendation of Brian.
Mm-hmm.
So I've already got a chance to taste it. So everybody else is about to have their...
Have our try.
Premiere. Yeah.
It looks all right.
I was waiting for that to happen. Yeah, the color is a little bit
it's very
lighter
honey
than
color.
What
yeah.
I would have
yeah.
expected.
In the bottle, it's got kind of a red or nut brown to it, but once it's poured, it's much lighter. It's almost a blonde.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. We got a little different layout on our recording studio, if that's what you call it.
Yeah.
I think it's worked out good last time, so things look like they're sounding good now, but we now have a round table. The entire council is here.
So, yeah.
So guys, let's give it a shot.
And we can reach each other.
Almost. Oh, I see exactly what you mean with the flavor being right at the front of that. But it's very pleasant.
Yeah, it's not bad. You can taste the mesquite. Mesquite's got a very sharp upfront flavor to it. And a lot of whiskeys they're subtle. You get the bite and then you get the wash of the warm, the creamy, depending on what it's mellowed with or what it's blended with. This is all up front. It's like as soon as it hits your teeth, you get that bam, bam of flavor. And then it mellows out to the back of your tongue and it's gone.
Yeah. It's like seeing Matthew McConaughey in a movie. You see him show up and you know exactly what you're getting.
Yeah, you're
but Matthew you're okay with it.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you want Matthew McConaughey,
yeah.
a character, you can only get Matthew McConaughey to play it.
Correct.
But that's the only thing you're getting out of him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's never going to play a Forrest Gump.
Yeah, he's one of the greats. So there's a couple guys like that that just play themselves.
Yeah. But sometimes it is like exactly what's needed.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't play Forrest Gump, but it'd be a lot cooler if he did.
Yeah,
zing.
He's kind of in that group with like James Spader, and they're all always the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you love that guy, so you're like, I'm cool.
Well, Al Pacino.
Yeah.
Pacino's
the only difference between Al Pacino, and I've seen him play, of course, the gangster movies and stuff like that, but I've also seen him play softer characters. But I've noticed over the years that the only real difference between Al Pacino is the volume of his voice.
Yeah, that's the only thing he adjusts.
If he's talking in calm tones, he can play a mellow character. Otherwise, he's just loud and obnoxious.
It's funny, even though this guy's played a lot more diverse characters, Jack Nicholson is kind of the same way. Jack Nicholson, no matter what he's playing.
This guy is the ultimate. He's the pinnacle of this, but you'll know what I'm talking about when I say it. Nicolas Cage has only acted like Nicolas Cage for how many years now?
I don't know. Is he 100 years old?
I don't know. Well, he's in some absolutely insane B-budget films.
Yeah. Gosh, just awful.
Yes.
Awful excuses for film. But... He can also sell stuff.
It's hilarious.
Just because
anyone has ever seen the show Community, it's a fantastic, irreverent show. But there's an entire episode about whether Nicolas Cage is good or bad.
Uh-huh.
And it's the impossible question.
Like, they walk away just saying yes?
It breaks Abed's brain in it. He's like trying to figure this out.
Right.
Well, it's like he plays the same character pretty much every time, so you've got to... But it's like he does it for a hobby. He don't give a crap. Somebody just throws him a script, and he's like, "You want to do this?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." I think
he has enough money.
Yeah, he's like, it only pays six boxes of donuts because we don't have much of a budget.
He's like, "I don't care.
I'm out of donuts."
But then, like, one of my absolute favorite movies of his was Matchstick Men.
Yeah,
and he just beautiful for that character. Just absolutely beautiful for it.
Yeah.
So there. There are two new ones that are in the modern B-budget Nicolas Cage era, which film has completely changed.
Yeah.
This is everywhere. I mean, the big blockbusters come along every now and then, but it's not like it used to be.
No.
But one of them is called Color Out of Space. And,
Yeah. That's an H.P. Lovecraft
story. It's a Lovecraft story. And it's kind of like The Thing.
Yeah.
And it's got a little bit of mixing into, what's the book with the zone?
The zone.
Oh, gosh.
Talking about
the Dead Zone?
Yeah, the Southern Reach
trilogy. The trilogy.
Yep. Yeah. So it's got a mix of that in there, and it's pretty good. It's it's got a lot of practical effects in it. Yeah. It's a horror film.
Yeah.
But then he did one called Pig.
Yeah, that is a crazy movie.
Yes.
Isn't that an A24 film? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
A24's, if you guys haven't gotten into their studios, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
They did The Green Knight most recently, but they've done hundreds of just off-kilter films. They did The Lobster, just films that are just not on anybody's radar. Do them well. It's crazy. Willem Dafoe's in several of their films, and that should tell you enough.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, that does. Yeah. He's another one where it's like, oh, he's in this movie. It's going to be weird.
Yeah, it's going to get a little fucked up.
Well, I don't know. William Dafoe hit 50 and just went exploded in all directions. Because before then, he was a great actor and he played, his films were serious. Yeah. They were great. They were good films. Got good accolades, everything like that, and it's like he hit 50 years old and he didn't give a shit anymore.
Yeah, well, he got into the, he's one of my favorite actors, Wes Anderson. He got into that crew, and I think it kind of changed him.
Yeah.
Because he's in like 8 Wes Anderson films, and I think it kind of...
So you're saying it was probably the opium?
Yeah. I would love to be on the set of a Wes Anderson film just because the amount of quality people he has consistently it would be amazing just to be on set to hear him talk.
So we dove in, guys, because this is a free dive today. And what we had talked about before is we're going to kind of lay out some framework for some of our future deep dives. And if anybody noticed my meme of Elon Musk holding a Shiba Inu on the page, we were talking about outliers. And this has been something, we've discussed this off mic many times. Groups of people that are outliers. I would say Nicolas Cage is an outlier as far as actors. So is McConaughey. You know, they're larger than life. But more importantly, you have people like Nikola Tesla, Albert Einstein. Those are outliers. And then you have your stranger individuals. The one I talk about a lot is McAfee.
Yeah,
he was quite wild. He was probably the world's first full-time troll.
Yeah.
It's almost as if
he was a heel.
Yes.
Like, that was his job.
Well, he tried all this. Like, he did this yoga studio and, like, this enlightenment stuff. And I think he finally just gave up. I was like, let's just troll everyone.
Yeah.
So, he's one of them. Elon Musk is obviously one of them. He's like, the guy's personality is just hilariously wooden.
Yeah.
But he's likable in a weird way.
He's
like a real life Sheldon Cooper.
Kind of.
Yeah, a little bit.
I don't know. He seems like the natural progression from like Ray Kurzweil to me. Ray Kurzweil was kind of the Elon Musk of the 80s.
Yeah.
He's a little less known, but he's a guy who, he at one point had the highest tested IQ on the planet of all time. He has this mathematical equation to predict the future of science and technology. And I don't understand it. It's several pages long, this equation.
Yeah.
But he claims to not have any superpowers. He doesn't believe in superpowers. But through this mathematical equation, I believe it's 1985, he wrote a book making over 200 predictions about the future of technology.
Yeah.
Not only what would happen, but when, where, how. And he's... for the ones who have had time to actually happen, because some of them are still in the future, he's like, I think, 92% accurate so far.
Yeah.
With his predictions. He predicted to the day when a chess program would beat the best chess player in the world. Just an interesting guy. And this is a guy, and this is why I say Elon's the natural progression. This is a guy who said for 20 years he wants to live forever. And what he means by that is, he calls it a bridge to a bridge to a bridge. Currently, he takes 128 essential vitamins and nutrients every day, 128 pills a morning. Mm-hmm. He said, that won't make me live forever. But he's calculated, he's gone back six generations to calculate his natural lifespan. And he said, that's going to extend my lifespan by about 18.7 years. Mm-hmm. And in that time, nanobot technology will be available, which also will not make me live forever, but it will add another 26 years to my lifespan. And then he said, by that time, I can be downloaded onto a non-biological substrate. And then we get into Neuralink. That's why I say
this is real.
Who was this? That's Elon?
Ray Kurzweil.
Ray Kurzweil.
Yeah, yeah, okay. He was kind of the predecessor of your Elon.
Speaking of lifespan, guys, you know, everyone knows it. On New Year's Eve, Betty White passed away.
Yes.
One of the amazing things I heard, and I did check this, and I believe it's true, Moneypenny, you may want to reference this, is that she drank every single day.
Vodka and soda.
That's it. Vodka, soda, every day. Yeah. And like, what, you live to be 99 and you drank a vodka and soda every day. So what we're doing, guys, is we're really just working on our health.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me do
it. So let's give a cheers.
Health tonic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw to it. Miss Betty. The best way I saw it put was not that she died, that she took 2021 to the fires of Sauron.
Drug it down, it shall not pass.
Yeah, she brought it down.
Yeah, she'll be back.
She sacrificed herself. She'll be back as Betty Gray.
Betty the Gold.
Yeah. Okay, Betty so the Golden. It turns out, and this is back in 2019, Betty White was interviewed and revealed that the secret to living longer, in her opinion, was vodka and hot dogs. Probably in that order.
Oh, nice.
So, I mean, I've got to say, I like her style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She said, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm a health nut. My favorite food is hot dogs with french fries. And my exercise, I have a 2-story house and a very bad memory, so I'm up and down those stairs. Oh, that's brilliant. She is kind of an amazing person. Mm-hmm. I mean, to start in film in the 1930s and still be intensely relevant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In society at 99 years old. I mean, she was in shows that I haven't even seen yet.
Yeah.
And by all accounts, still hilarious.
She is truly an American treasure.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Really,
and
was.
She was a very generous person.
Mm-hmm.
Generous with her time.
Yeah.
But she was just a good person all around.
Yep.
Yeah. I seen, like everyone else, all over Facebook, everything's being flooded with her because of her passing. But I saw an article, it was an interview with Dolly Parton about hanging out with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall that night. Oh. They went out drinking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Two of the most amazing women.
Yeah.
And fiercest women.
Do you guys realize that People Magazine, because her 100th birthday is this month, had already
scheduled the party,
a show, or an
they already had
issue.
The issue done.
Yeah. So I'm.
She was only 17 days away from her birthday.
I know. Yeah. Can you even imagine? Like, first,
I can't imagine living into 99.
No, so. I know.
No, like, I couldn't imagine dying less than 3 weeks away from my 100th birthday.
Yeah.
But it does seem unfair.
There are days where I'm pretty shocked that I made it to 39.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, our first early episode, Justin, you and I both should not be here. I mean,
yeah,
the vehicles are a motherfucker, guys. They can mess you up fast. So
yeah, I've had many.
I've had multiple near-death experiences. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I was driving. Actually, I believe I was driving to see you, Moneypenny, and there's a two-lane headed where you saw the wreck with the lady that went off in the woods.
Yeah.
There's a weird two-lane highway that 50 branches off, and you have two lanes going one way and two lanes going another way with a big median in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And someone pulled out of a random gas station there and was just dead convinced that he was on a standard highway and just kept accelerating towards me. I had a large black SUV beside me who fortunately was paying attention because I ran him all the way off the road.
Wow.
And the guy, he finally caught what he was doing and was in a full panic and pulled off the road.
Yeah.
I have no idea what happened after that. I was just
out.
I was gone and I was happy. And the guy in the SUV was not a dick at all.
The one he forced off the road.
He went on the median.
Yeah.
But he didn't honk. He didn't do anything. He slowed down.
He saw what was happening.
So thanks to that guy, random guy.
Yeah.
It was a nice SUV too, like a new black, I think a Chevy.
Yeah.
So I'm glad nothing got torn up. Yeah. And I'm glad I didn't get hit head on again, because two killed, times in a lifetime, I would just be like, I'm never driving again. I'm gonna fly everywhere.
Yeah. I'm gonna figure out teleportation. Buy a house next to an airport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Walk to an airport and go.
Figure out teleportation.
It kind of shocked me though. I mean, think about how many accidents there are in this country constantly. I somehow have only been in one. Mm-hmm. I got rear-ended by a guy. I was literally stopped.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for this person to have hit me at all, except they were clearly just not paying attention.
Yeah.
Because I had stopped to let a semi back out, which, you know, takes some time.
Yeah, it does.
I was driving a stick. I had not only stopped my car, I knew I was going to be there a while. I had pulled my e-brake. I'm just chilling. And smack, my car is totaled.
Wow.
And what kind of day do you have to have where you are consciously driving this thing that can actually kill people, does it all the time.
Yeah.
And you're just like, whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's because we're so used to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a daily part of our
complacent.
Lives.
Complacent.
It's become so ordinary that people don't think about it. They take it for granted.
Yeah.
And we catch ourselves doing it. I guarantee every one of us in this room has done stupid crap and not just been 10 and 2 focusing on that road the whole time. It takes such a little amount of time with your eyes off of what you're doing for something to go wrong. And even if it's not your fault. But if you're there, if you weren't watching when that guy was coming down the wrong side of the road, if you had been looking away for just 10 seconds to look back, would you have had the time to get out of the
way?
There's no way. Or would you got smoked?
My theory is I think he thought I was passing that SUV.
Really?
So he went ahead and pulled out, but I wasn't. Everyone was going the same direction in the same lane.
Yeah.
And he was going the complete wrong direction. You're not supposed to be going that direction on that road.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a trip. I had my moment of rage and calmed down. And you know what? We're all good. And you know, another thing that gets me, my car was banned from import in 2015. It's a turbo diesel Volkswagen. So, the Dieselgate happened in 2015. Yeah. Volkswagen had set them up to go into a different tune when you plugged them up, which was technically not illegal, but...
definitely shady.
They were like, well,
they were fudging some numbers.
Now, what kills me is they banned those cars. So, if that car gets hit, I'm going to have a seriously hard time replacing. It's also a manual Passat, and that's the rarest of all those. So that would just kill me. Now this is another weird thing that happened with those though. In Europe, the I think it's called the Blue Tech, might be saying that wrong. That might be the Mercedes, but the new diesel in the Volkswagens there is getting 78 miles per gallon.
Yeah.
But it makes 10% too much pollution to be in the United States.
Oh,
that's
That's interesting because usually Europe has stronger emission standards than we do here.
They're more open to diesel. We have been in a war against diesel for a while.
Yeah.
We also killed the electric car.
Yeah.
That absolutely happened. The GM EV1.
Ooh. Yeah.
Well, there was the guy that, back in, what was the 70s, that invented the car that ran on water.
Yeah.
It was estimated that it would take somewhere in the neighborhood of, 6 gallons? Or 9 gallons to get from New York to the West Coast.
Those were the hydrogen fuel cell cars that they swore up and down was a big conspiracy. And now that, I've told my little sister, we talked about peak oil. And I said, the day we actually hit a real oil shortage, there will be a hydrogen station in every city.
Yeah.
It'll happen quick.
They're waiting. Clint and I both know an engineer that worked on hydrogen fuel cells for the government.
Yeah.
He helped design them.
I watched a video here of a guy that was designing one, and then I seen a car that was supposedly have came out as a hydrogen car.
Mm-hmm.
That's just been 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But the way I seen it, they broke it down and actually, because the problem with hydrogen is it's so volatile. You get into a rear end accident and it punctures that hydrogen tank, and it's literally the Hindenburg.
Yeah.
That's why it burned up.
Yeah.
Well, the way they solved the solution was is when aluminum comes in contact with water, it creates a chemical reaction and separates the water molecules into the hydrogen and the oxygen. And then the hydrogen being a lighter, it comes to the top and it can be burned off. The beautiful part about hydrogen as a fuel source is the only emission that hydrogen has when it burns is water. Yep. It combines it back with oxygen and becomes water.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that aluminum oxidizes instantaneously when it comes in contact with air. They created a few years ago, 5-ish, give or take, don't quote me on that, I'd have to look it up, but they created an alloy compound that allowed aluminum to have enough of the aluminum to it to still have the chemical reaction with water that would prevent it from oxidizing. And the video I watched of them doing it in this demonstration of how to separate it and burn it was dropping, they had a water tank and they were dropping these small pelletized pieces of aluminum into the tank, which would cause a certain amount of reaction until it coated, and then it would emit a certain amount of hydrogen out, and then all you had to do is just you traded in your coated pieces of aluminum for a new canister of aluminum, refilled the back up, put a new tank of water in it, and you were ready to go again. Completely safe and contained, and still profitable for any of the corporations out there that wanted to provide the aluminum alloy that did it.
With the hydrogen cars, what I heard when they started talking about these becoming mainstream is that they weren't actually a replacement fuel. They were fuel cell cars. So they were more like an electric car.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I think we'll probably get into is use the hydrogen to drive the generator.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the electric cars are here to stay, and that literally was... There was a conspiracy against electric cars. That absolutely happened. But what I've heard is that we are so dependent on the fuel tax that we can't reduce the amount of fuel we're selling. It would be a problem.
Yeah.
So we reduce the fuel, the tax has to go up. Well, if you start putting out cars that, for one, don't use that, you have a problem. For two, that get 78 miles per gallon, you have a problem there, too. And I believe that. So GM had the EV1 was the first one, and they fielded these. People were driving them everywhere. They had pretty good reviews. We're talking back in nickel-cadmium battery days.
Yeah.
The tech was so far back, but these were pretty successful cars, and they took them all. There's a film called Who Killed the Electric Car.
Mm-hmm.
They took them all and pulled them off the road.
It is.
Yeah. And then Elon... The guy literally was like, I'm just going to do it this way. And we had lithium.
Yeah.
The tech was here. He made it happen. He also said he was going to send a rocket to space and all this, and he would do it so much cheaper than the federal government. And he did it.
I remember them talking about that being a joke when he first talked about it.
Oh, gosh.
10 years ago?
Yeah. Oh, I remember thinking, what is this?
The media put him down so hard about that. Yeah. And then he just does it, and they're like, that's a cool thing. We knew he could do it the whole time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. We supported him. Something interesting that he has open source on I believe it's the Tesla website, is a clear solar panel. Literally, he's talking about the cities of the future. You replace all the windows in a skyscraper with clear solar panels, and you can literally, one building powers the entire city.
Yeah.
And it would completely revolutionize the way we use power.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, but he literally, it's open source. He is like, if you can improve this or make it better, why? I don't need more money. I need the world to change.
I remember him being interviewed, and he was talking about the solar panels we have for recharging right now, and he said that we're at, I can't remember how low it was, but it was a ridiculously low, in the 20s% of the energy consumption and reproduction. It was like way little. And he was asked about how much that was going to change, and he just kind of laughed it off. He's like, that's not. He's like, we're at pretty much the peak of what we can do. He's like, I do not see it going up more than just a percent or two in my lifetime.
Yeah. Right.
He says, we just don't have the technology now. And he's like, 100 years from now, maybe. Maybe we will. But within my lifetime, I don't see it going up.
The problem has always been storing the right. power from solar. But he claimed in that same video to have a 2-inch thick, I think it was like a 2x4, essentially, battery that only weighed like, I think, 8 or 9 pounds. You could hang it on a wall. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about the future that he envisioned, the future city. You would just hang several batteries on the walls of every floor of this building. And just doing the windows, like, you could power an entire city. That's, I don't know.
Well, you power your own house with whatever window you're on. So then the highest priced apartments would be on, like, the eastern side. Of apartments. Yeah. The north side apartments would suck so bad.
Yeah.
and then somebody goes and puts a billboard up in front of your house and you're in the Stone Age.
Yeah.
I'm sure we would have the power sharing. I had to wire them together and stuff. But
yeah.
So you guys were talking about the hydrogen cars before, which was not something that I was familiar with at all. So I looked this up. There are three different ones on the market today.
Yeah. So I believe it was Schwarzenegger wanted to put in the hydrogen highway in California.
Yeah.
For just hydrogen cars.
Yeah, that was definitely
that way. If they blew up, they would only kill themselves.
Debate. And you know, that idea was coming at a time when people were already starting to develop this distaste and distrust of Silicon Valley and that kind of startup culture, which was it seemed very. It seemed to serve only a certain subset of the population that lived there. I mean, there are Californians who do not live in mansions. There are Californians who, you know, are very conservative. There are Californians who live in the country. Like, this is, it's a big state. There's a lot of people there.
Oh my God, it's
and ideas
huge.
Like that were just like proof that, I don't know, I don't think any governor of California recently has been amazing, but like Schwarzenegger just felt like so out of touch. We were just that was a laughable idea. It was so far the governator. From the top concern of anyone. We were all concerned.
But then on
about
the flip side, you end up with somebody like Jesse Ventura, which was a fantastic governor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh my God, people! He almost won the last year, the year after. The election after he had quit being governor, he almost had enough votes with him not being on the ballots to win.
To win it.
Absolutely.
Oh, we're bringing you back, bro.
They wanted him to come back. He was convinced. Like, he got, like, paranoid. Somebody was, last time I seen him, he had published a video online somewhere, couldn't tell you where, of him talking about, I mean, like, paranoid acting, like, completely not himself. He looked like he'd lost 100 pounds. He was, like, super skinny.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't release where he was releasing the video from and stuff. Like, he was convinced people were after him to kill him.
Hmm.
I'm not saying he's wrong. I mean, look at McAfee.
Yeah.
Hey, well, I didn't suicide myself.
Yeah.
And that Chris Kyle thing with him was so strange.
Yeah.
So strange. He won the lawsuit. It was a lie.
Yeah.
And then they overturned it. They overturned the monetary value and the he's stealing from his wife. I'm like, guys, he literally made up a story that he beat him up and it never happened. He didn't do that's crazy defamatory.
Yeah.
So that was really strange to me. That whole thing's really strange. That guy getting killed randomly too was really strange. And him saying stuff that pretty sure he wasn't allowed to say about doing military operations inside the U.S. during Katrina. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're supposed to say that stuff, guys.
Yeah.
I think it's tier one stuff. And you're 20 years or something is the delay on that, right? 25?
Yeah.
So, that whole thing is strange. And that did draw in Jesse Ventura. He got caught into that. He had the lawsuit and everything. But he did win.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, strange. Yeah, I haven't seen Jesse in a long time.
No, pretty much since that video, I haven't heard a word about him.
We're gonna have to find Jesse Ventura, guys.
But you were talking about that earlier, and that's what's one of the things that astonished me. Here, a little sidebar: you got these major cities, and it's usually your coastals, your East Coast and your West Coast, But unfortunately, that's where the bulk of the population of the country live. But you get the people, when people live in cities and they're that closely packed together, they get mindsets that are just absurd in a lot of ways. Yeah. And they try to, because there's so many of them packed in close, they flood the system with votes, and you know, and then they end up getting governors that are allowing people. They were paying people to riot in Oregon, paying people to riot. And the ones that were getting caught, put in jail, the government was posting their bond and getting brought out. And what, because they refused to actually prosecute, when you don't do that, you get your bond back. The government was paying the bond for them to get brought out of jail, and then they went over there and got their bond money back.
Yeah.
It was just, it's just ridiculous. And places like this are making the rules that govern all the rest of us.
Yeah.
All these hundreds of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of smaller towns and smaller cities across this country that don't think in such strong abstracts that the people in these big cities do. And it's just, they're making these decisions based on their media driven mania that just don't make any sense. They go against all science, and it's in every aspect of our lives. It's
And it's even in some very benign ways. So a decade of living on the West Coast led me to make some very interesting life choices that would just be absurd for me to do now.
Yeah.
I had two dogs. I brought them to doggy daycare every day.
Yeah.
Every day. They are dogs. They have each other for company. I worked a lot, but like, they would have been fine. But that was the type of thing where I felt like, in order to be a responsible dog owner in this type of society, I needed to make sure that they got constantly socialized.
Yeah.
And like, did I end up with perfect dogs? No, I did not, because they're dogs.
But
like,
you ended up with a lot less money.
I did, a lot less money. And, you know, coming back here and being exposed to people, you know, I grew up here in the Midwest. I remembered what it was like, but coming back, I would worry about things that other people are just like,
why do you care that much about it?
Yep.
Well, one of the things, I don't remember if I brought it up on the podcast before, if it was something we were talking off air, but I'm big into hunting, big into conservation, of course. We've talked about this before. But one of the things that blows my mind about California in particular is the mountain lion hunting. We talked about that, I can't remember when. But they banned mountain lion hunting in California many years ago. And that was all from the feels of the people in the cities that pretty much never actually had to deal with them. Then mountain lions became such a problem because they were so overpopulated and they have zero natural predators besides man.
They're an apex
predator. That they became such a problem that they got petitioned by the smaller ends of government and the farmers and stuff that were having to deal with such a problem that the government started going out and poisoning and killing them.
Yeah,
and the people are completely fine with that. They're fine with the government going out and just mass slaughtering several and whatever hundred else species every gets a hold of that.
I mean, mountain lions are legitimate. I mean, it was a constant concern. Over half of California is
You talking about your dogs is the reason why I thought about that, because I don't get, if you put a dog in a kennel, it better have a damn roof. A mountain lion go right over there and take Fifi off into the woods and eat him. They don't care. And they get a little bit too bad. And the problem with having an apex predator overpopulated is, and especially in an area that is overpopulated by people, when an apex predator gets overpopulated, the prey goes down. When the prey goes down, they get hungry. They didn't stop having babies. Yeah. They just stopped having food to feed the babies. Yeah. And there has been, coyotes are the biggest one in this category that I can think of, because they breed so proficiently and they're so out of control everywhere. But there's been areas where people's kids are getting snatched. And I mean, how long is it going to be before, I mean, you wouldn't be able to stop. I mean, most people do not understand how big a mountain lion is.
Yeah, you couldn't stop a bobcat if it was really dedicated.
A bobcat, a big bobcat's 50 pounds, and that's a monster bobcat.
Yeah. But a mountain lion's
for a small experiment, anybody who's got the average house cat, go over and grab it by the back and then stick it in a bucket of water.
See, yeah.
See how that treats you. Now picture that, that's a 4 to 5 pound cat. Picture a 400 pound mountain lion doing the same thing.
Yep. Yeah. There is a video online now where a guy is hiking and gets cornered and is basically begging this mountain lion to not attack him, and it just won't. It's stalking straight on him, and that's motion.
Was that the one in California on the hiking trail?
Head down, and that move forward.
And he actually like false charged a few times. That he had gotten a little too close to a clutch of kittens.
Yep.
And you could see him in the background at the very first part of it, and he never did anything wrong. But I remember seeing so much hate about this guy because
He would have died.
Like he was intruding upon this cat. So much hate from these like extremists that like he did something wrong by walking down this trail and then backing up away from this cat.
Yeah, he's in terror. If you've ever seen the video,
oh my god, I've seen it several times. Yeah. And the guy, I believe he had a weapon.
Yeah, he has a Glock. I think it's a 9mm.
But he never used it, and he talks about it. Mm-hmm. I've seen like conversations about the guy or whatever afterwards, and he said he had it ready and never used it. But and then all these people, these like extremists, are talking about how he's just an evil person about thinking about using it. I'm like, are you kidding me? The guy did everything right and it worked out perfectly. This cat followed him for hundreds of yards, and the guy was walking backwards the entire time, never took his eyes off the cat, kept eye contact, never panicked and ran when the cat false charged.
That's a guarantee. Yeah.
The guy did everything right, and everybody walked away alive, including the mountain lion that was protecting her cubs.
Yeah,
they're gonna he wasn't getting attacked because the mountain lion was hungry. People die every year from mountain lion attacks because the mountain lion just wants to kill them.
Yep.
This mountain lion didn't, and everybody worked out the same. But why would you think that it would not be okay for that guy to use lethal force against a mountain lion attacking him? Yeah. He didn't. Mm-hmm. He did everything perfect. I don't know why you guys aren't singing his praises.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
This guy did everything.
That was excellent.
Right.
There's another terrifying video that you can find online where a guy is riding his bike on trails in a forest. Looks like a pine forest.
Yeah.
And he gets dead chased by a black bear.
Oh my goodness.
The
yes.
panic this gentleman goes through is insane. And it's real. I mean, it just bolts on him. The bear's probably just playing, because I'm pretty sure it could have ran him down and just
God, yeah. Okay. I mean, maybe Lance Armstrong could out-bicycle a black bear.
Maybe.
But all the gear. That's a maybe, and only because he's got one less testicle to slow him down.
This has happened more than once, the cyclist being chased by bears.
Oh, yeah,
like, multiple times. These all appear to be legitimate.
What's happening is the bears think it's a unicycle and they want to ride it.
Yeah. My great-great-grandpappy was in the circus.
Come on, slow down.
Well, and that's I mentioned that on our conservation podcast, how the black bear population is growing at an average of 10% a year.
Yep.
And have been for about a decade. The black bear population is just exploding. And that's one of the things I was thinking of when I was talking about the extreme populations in these mass cities. Like Washington was the most recent one to do it, but they're not the only one. There's been several of them recently that have mass population centers that don't make decisions based on science. Washington just eliminated their spring bear season. Why? Their spring black bear season. Why?
Yeah.
There are hundreds of thousands of black bears in this country, and they will become a problem. You were talking about that guy on a bicycle getting chased by a black bear. Did you see, was it 3 years ago? I believe it was the guy in the national park that was just out for a hike and took pictures of the black bear that ate him.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's got like several pictures. They found the guy's phone laying next to what was left of the pile of him. And when they looked at his phone, he had about 6 pictures of this black bear coming through the woods. And every picture, the black bear is a little closer, a little closer, a little closer, a little closer. And then he was just dead right there.
Yeah.
Wow.
He just filmed his own demise.
There's a huge uptick of people dying trying to selfie with animals. Like, there was a rash of people with moose, a buffalo, or a bison, rather. and rattlesnakes. Like they're literally trying to tie
them. Pentecostal? Like, why would you do that?
There was a kid, I think he was a kid, probably 17, 18, tried to go Facebook Live with a rattlesnake and literally died within minutes of, like...
So, yeah. About 20 years ago, 22 years ago, I lived in Geneva, Switzerland, and a tourist there died because he was taking a photo of a tour group and literally just backed right on into a street
and,
wow.
got, hit,
and yeah. got hit by a bus or something. But it was like, seriously, that photo was that important?
Have you read any of these?
Paying attention to traffic?
Yeah. Have you read any of these articles about people following their GPS to their death?
Yes!
Oh my gosh. Oh my God. I actually had coworkers taking a left do something
into
like
a
this.
Lake and shit.
Oh my God.
They took a left into a cornfield and got about a half a mile into it.
What?
Like, we thought it was a gravel road. Like, you didn't see the corn.
You didn't see the corn hitting the windshield.
Well, there was two, when Pokemon Go came out for phones, there was two teenagers, I want to say in California, don't quote me.
California, you're just getting it today.
But I walked off the side of a cliff looking at their phone trying to catch a Pikachu.
Oh, it was a Pikachu, though, man.
Yeah. I don't think they died. They got hurt real bad.
Did
I don't
they
think
catch
they
the
died.
Pikachu?
I imagine Pikachu fled once they fell off the cliff. But
he missed with the Pokeball. it makes it way more difficult.
But I mean, that kind of comes full circle back to we were talking about the distracted driving thing. We take stuff for granted. We stop paying attention to our surroundings, and it's the same way.
Complacency kills.
Complacency, man.
Yeah,
it's the same way with guns. You know, guys that carry a gun every day, they get so complacent that sometimes I can tell guys that are really, really comfortable because they'll do stuff I wouldn't do anymore. And I'm like, hey, man, you got to catch that.
Yeah.
Friend of mine in the military had a story about one of the guys that, old soldier. He'd been around forever, and he actually fired a round off in the barracks through the wall. He says the closest he's ever been to actually get shot. He said that it freaked the guy out so bad he cried. Because he's like, I don't see how this happened.
There's literally, I think, 10 or 15 videos of firearm instructors for the police shooting themselves.
Yes, they're all.
Like in the foot. And
in
like,
the classroom with the kids, I saw that. It was he's like, cocks the gun, and is holding finger on the trigger, talking about it, like, well, he didn't point it at the kids. That was the only safety thing he got right. He was up at the ceiling, he was talking about it. You can't hear what he's saying. It's kind of background noise. And he's like up at the ceiling, and then he has it down to the ground. He's down there for a few seconds as he's talking about stuff, and all of a sudden it's just pop!
Yeah.
And he's bouncing on one side.
To just go with it.
I worked with a kid who's like, I think he's 20 at Papa John's, that literally his friend was showing him his 45, and it went off and shot him straight through the cheek.
Oh, lucky.
Yeah,
kid.
Like lucky he got kid. Real lucky.
Yep.
Like, it broke one of his teeth, but it, like, just barely nicked one of his teeth. His mouth was open, thank God.
Oh, luckily. Otherwise, he would have no teeth left.
Yeah, but he had two. One hole was much bigger than the other, the exit wound.
I had a similar situation when I was a young teenager, maybe around, maybe not quite even teenager age, 12, 13, around there. a kid up the road from where I grew up. Was over there hanging out with him and everybody was gone. This is back in a gentler age when you didn't have to worry about leaving your kids at home.
Yeah.
But he got into his dad's gun cabinet to just show some off to me. And luckily, kind of the same situation as that cop in the classroom, he was at least very vigilant on where he had the barrel pointed. And he had showed me, it was probably the third or fourth gun that he showed me. And I'd grown up ground guns all my life. The first thing I ever do when somebody hands me a gun is check sure it's not loaded.
Yeah.
First thing ever, I don't care if they just jacked that bolt back and showed me. Yeah. I will still jack that bolt back and make sure they didn't just accidentally load one.
Yeah.
I've seen that happen. It's not loaded, see? And then it wasn't when they did it, but they hand it to you and then suddenly it is. Well, there was one in that clip. Well, anyway, it was about the third or fourth gun this guy had showed me, and he brought out this pump action 22. And for whatever reason, he had his damn finger on the trigger, and he brought it out, and then he showed it to me, and it was exactly like one my grandfather had. and he didn't hand it directly to me. And he's like, yeah, this thing's pretty good. And he jacks it back. Pump action just like a 12 gauge. 22. Yep. I know a lot of the listeners probably won't even know what we're talking about.
Yeah, but they used to be carnival guns. Real
popular yeah, thing. They're an unusual and I don't believe anybody makes them anymore. But when he jacked that thing back, and as soon as he brought it forward, it loaded one in the chamber, and he had his finger on the trigger yep. and shot a hole in the roof.
Damn. Yep.
And just luckily, this guy, now, granted, like I said, 12, 13, been around guns all my life. I would have said something immediately had he ever pointed the first one at me.
Right.
Yeah.
I would not have put up with that. So, kind of both of us were vigilant enough in that particular aspect of it. But that's the only thing that saved me and him. But he still had a hole in the roof he had to explain to his dad when he got home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your 13-year-old getting out all your guns and showing the neighbor kid, and I just shot a hole in the roof, Dad. But, I mean, how many people... This is a guy whose dad hunted all his life.
Yeah.
Showing a guy whose dad's hunted all his life. We grew up around it all the time.
Yeah.
If that had been somebody who grew up around somebody that didn't hunt, that just happened to have a gun in the house for self-protection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And wasn't quite so vigilant. How easily would that have been a shot in the neck?
Yeah. Or shot in the foot.
And yeah. any bullet in you anywhere
is a big not deal. Good. Trust yeah. me, it's yeah. a big
but
deal.
But how would that situation have gone with somebody that hadn't grown up in the rural community that I grew up in?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I have a classmate.
Would that be a funeral that one of us, one of our parents had to go to?
Yep.
I mean, yeah. it can happen so simply, so fast.
Moneypenny, where was that at? That you had a classmate die?
So in Cincinnati, so one of my high school classmates a few years after we graduated was at a party. Normal people doing normal things, just hanging out. And they went into their father's study, as far as I've heard the story, and just, you know, took out his dad's gun to show his friends. He clearly didn't check to see if it yeah. was loaded.
Probably didn't know any better.
And he died immediately. Yeah. Yeah. And everyone was just like, we don't even know how to handle this. First of all, the part of Cincinnati that I'm from, I'm sure plenty of people own guns, but there yeah. are probably very few hunters. It's just, you know, middle class white it's suburbia.
Cincinnati. Yeah. It's Cincinnati. Yeah, I mean, in right. any big city,
the
average is going to be low.
So yeah. I'm positive that even though that, you know, 20 something at that point knew where the gun was and had probably held it before, maybe even had fired it before,
yeah.
he still didn't know mm-hmm. enough.
Yeah.
To prevent what should have been a pretty simple thing to prevent.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what terrifies people so much. I think
ignorance kills when it comes to
it
guns.
Is. And, it is. And I think absolutely we have is. To bear in mind that culturally speaking, guns are a fact of life in our country.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going anywhere. So what can we do to improve things rather than,
yeah.
like, let's not even worry about whether we should have guns or not.
We should
okay?
have
we just
mandatory
do.
Safety training.
That should. It should.
And, that was a fact of life. In this area, I remember in middle school having a gun safety class.
Yep.
Every year. Hunter education happened yeah. in 7th grade.
Yep.
Yeah.
In our schools here. Yeah. They don't do it anymore. Awesome. They don't yeah. do it anymore.
They don't do it anymore.
I think there's been some talks about reinstating it, and I really, really hope they
but
do.
But I mean, the average truck in the 70s in this area had a .22 in the back of
yeah.
it.
That's,
and
I
there
remember,
were no
yeah.
mass shootings. Mm-hmm. There were no people killing each other.
As of 2018, there are 120 guns in the United States for every 100 people. That means that
yeah.
I will encounter a gun.
Yeah.
yeah.
Everyone will.
Yeah.
So, therefore, I do think it's important that yeah. everyone yeah. learn that safety.
To be educated.
Because yeah. what are you going to do?
And that's the ones the feds have tracked.
Yeah.
yeah. Exactly. Trust me, there's
right.
a lot
Those
more,
are,
guys.
Yeah.
There's a lot more.
That's there's like a Swiss research project that
yeah.
researches this, so I don't know how accurate the number
so
is,
go ahead and
but
split
it seems
up.
Plausible, yeah. right? Like, based on, I mean, most of the people I know who own guns don't own one gun. Well, they own 30.
The problem with firearms is the way we look at it in this country. We've got, and we've talked about this before, the polarization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the extremes.
You get extremes of both sides, and the extremes are the squeaky wheels that gets the grease. And that's what you hear about. That's what they broadcast on the media. That's what even the pro-gun side, they only want to show this squeaky wheel. The media anti-gun side, they want to show this squeaky wheel.
Yeah.
Guns are a tool. Yeah. And only as dangerous as the hands they're in.
Yeah.
Would you leave in your house a skill saw plugged into the wall in the same room your toddler is playing with?
Exactly. Never.
You're not going to do it.
Yeah.
The problem is how we look at them. Yeah. There are a lot of tools in this world that are dangerous.
Yep. Yeah.
There are, not counting the guns that are in this house, but there are probably, I can name with, if you gave me 1 minute to choose, I could run around this house right now and probably pick you out 15 things that I could kill every one of you with.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I can see like
tools are deadly.
Yeah.
The most effective tools are usually the deadliest.
Yeah.
The problem is we teach safety, we expect respect from everything else. If you got a stove that you're cooking your food on and your kid walks up, you immediately push that kid away and say, "No hot."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You got a knife that you're cutting with and it's sitting on the edge of the table, your kid walks up and wants to grab it. No. It's sharp. It's gonna hurt you. Problem is we don't treat guns like they're tools.
Yep. Yeah.
We treat them like they're evil or like they're a godsend. They're neither.
Like, or like they're toys.
They are neither. They are a tool.
Which they're quite clearly not.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you can do fun things with them. I get that. That doesn't make it a toy.
Yeah. I can do fun things with a knife.
Exactly.
I can do fun things with an industrial lathe. I'm not going to let my 5-year-old play with it.
Yeah.
No.
They are a tool like any other and only as deadly as the hands that they are in. Yeah. And that's the issue with how we look with guns.
And, you know, we're talking about outliers here. And this is a very negative way to look at outliers. But if you look at the people that do these shootings, it is alarming how many of them the FBI have actually personally talked to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Profiled already.
Yeah. Concerning. Now, there's a thing going on right now. We don't touch on politics on the show, but this is not necessarily politics. This is federal, I think, misconduct. There was a group of guys that were supposedly trying to kidnap a governor.
Yeah.
And there was a big bust. That has shaken down now where everyone involved in the actual plotting, planning, and all this were either federal agents or they were being paid. And this
all
is
FBI.
This is crazy. Now, there's another thing that happened. This was after the Charlie Hebdo shooting, there was a Draw Muhammad contest in Texas.
Yep.
And a group of people upset about this rolled up and were going to shoot it up. Now, this is fucking Texas.
Yeah.
They got lit up.
Yeah.
There was an FBI undercover agent in the car with them, armed. So, I don't understand. Something is not right.
Yeah.
When the feds make the terrorists they bust.
Yeah.
What would have happened if Billy Bob Joe on there said, "Oh, well, I ain't going to wait on these guys. I'm going to go up here and shoot these guys from the side." And I think that happens sometimes. Yeah, I really do.
I do too.
It's already, we've got enough proof to show that it's happening.
The false flags.
I don't
flag
understand the false flags. I mean, it's just, it's insane the amount of evidence that we have that mounts against it. And people are like, don't be a conspiracy theorist. It makes no sense. We created Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
We created Al-Qaeda. This is
true.
Yeah. I mean, they were a small band of nothings until we financially and backed them and militarized them.
We didn't like the Russians.
We're one of the Russians to lose Afghanistan. Let's just put you in power. Yeah. It'll be fine.
Well, and I think we highly underestimated that region's ability to build ungodly tough people.
Yeah. Oh, you have to be resilient to live in that.
Like, we're like, we gave them some old rockets and some old AKs, and they're still using them, and they're pretty effective.
Rebuilding them.
There's the fighters coming out
it's
of
like
that
the
area.
Cubans with the 1950s
originally,
car.
Originally, we wanted them to fight the Russians, correct?
Yes.
The Russians were in the area, and we militarized a guerrilla group mm-hmm. to help fight the Russians.
The Russians,
and then were when we and then we left, backing the regime. And we knew these yeah. were extremist groups. Absolutely. We knew they were.
Yeah,
but it was the extremist groups are willing to go and die mm-hmm. for the things that they want to be and want to happen. So we financially and backed them and militarized and them yeah. to fight
every
against the
time
Russians.
Every time we're in the Middle East, we fuck over the Purg Mesha. Every fucking time we ally with these guys, they are badasses. They people here think they're like Islamic extremists. They practice a completely different faith.
Right. Yeah.
They're from the mountains. They don't even have their own country. They're from all the mountainous regions in the Middle East, the Hindu Kush region. And they're badass fighters. Purg Mesha literally means man who does not fear death. And we will arm them up, give them a little money, give them some food, and be like, fight this fight for us. And they're like, okay, if you do this for us. And then after they fight the fight for us, we're like, oh, peace. It was nice dealing with you. Like, oh, weren't you going to
do this thing for us?
Yeah. And we're like,
we're
not going to
do it, but you left us these AK-47s, so we're going to go ahead and do it anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you were talking about that one about the kidnapping of the governor. I remember reading about that. There was nobody involved in that that had any possible way. Like, they busted them. And then did investigations and come to find out some of those were even homeless people. I think a majority of them were homeless people. They had no financial way of doing what they wanted to do.
I have a clarifying question. Are we talking about the plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan?
Whitmer, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So, I'm not seeing what you guys are seeing.
Yeah, this is coming out.
It sounds like, first of all, so earlier you said that it appeared that many of them had ties to the FBI and everything. It's, that must be deep in here somewhere, but it's not showing up for me. I need to hear about this because I had the same thought when you said that, like, oh, why am I surprised? We create villains all the time as a nation because, you know, I think it's very likely that our country often has goals that we know are politically inconvenient.
So this is the story.
And if we can manipulate someone else into doing our dirty work, we absolutely
And that's the problem with any government. I mean, every government's going to have unpopular things that they have to do and make really hard decisions.
Definitely.
So I'm not completely against the government doing some shady things.
Money
I understand that it has to happen.
We're either going to be killing people or paying other people to kill people. I get that.
but there are lines I feel like shouldn't be crossed.
Yes. Look this up. One of the guys that was a federal agent,
yeah.
It came out that he was because he beat his wife after a swingers party.
Oh, wow.
There's more to this.
Yeah. Mm. We got to realize, too, that media, and Google is a form of media, suppresses information. Just for a small aside, I remember when I very first heard about Omicron coming out, the variant, I read about three different scientists, one of which was not even in this country, that said that Omicron was going to be the savior of the world.
Yes.
Because Omicron had five protein spikes, which meant that it was far more contagious, but far more volatile and easy for the body to expel, to kill. So everybody's going to get it, and then everybody's going to have the antibodies, but it wasn't going to be that potent.
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks on, you can't read anything about that. But you can find out a bunch of stuff about how it has shut down everything in the world and is clogging our hospitals.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, with something like Google, when you look it up, you have to look beyond about the first 50 hits before you start finding out the stuff that they have been doing everything that they can to bury and suppress.
Well,
I know that's conspiracy theorist of me.
Well,
and
sometimes you have to know what you're looking for. So instead, I definitely did a more specific search about an FBI agent involved in a kidnapping plot for Michigan.
Yes.
And that's when I found it, which, and this is a source that I would consider if they were wrong, they would have been called on it by now, yeah. and they would have taken it down.
Right.
So for me, that's a reputable news source. If you find out that you posted something incorrect, it happens, we're human,
yeah.
you take it down.
Right.
Or correct it, you know. For me, or that's all we're going to get. Yeah, or bury it, or it just disappears. What? That didn't happen. We never said that.
Yeah.
That scientist was a kook. He went to University of Columbia.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Mr. Trask, you found him, haven't you?
Yeah.
Oh.
Right?
Wow.
And yeah. I may be correct on breadcrumbs,
guys. I don't like handing the whole enchilada to you unless we're deep diving.
I may be incorrect on how many were homeless, but I know for a fact that I remember reading that at least one of them was, and I wanted to say more than one was because it was a small group of people.
Yeah. There's like six of them that are charged, I think.
Yeah.
I just read
seven. Like there was like
one of them pled guilty already.
Yeah. But like vastly under monetized for doing the things that they wanted to do. Like they had these elaborate plans of what they wanted to do.
We're gonna fly a helicopter and jump out of it.
And they were these people wanted to do this. I'm not taking that away. These people wanted to do this. But they had no way of doing it, and a lot of this was supposedly the idea of the undercover FBI agents exacerbating what the ideals of these people were. Mm-hmm. And those people were relying on the money that these FBI agents were promising them to be able to bring to the table to do what they were accomplishing to do.
And it used to be, the boogeyman in our country used to be the Muslim guy down the road. Yeah. Or the Sikh, because he looks enough like that guy.
Right.
And they would find immigrants that were pretty undereducated, very religious, and be like, oh, you need to drive this bomb in here.
Yeah.
You know, and they did this. This is known, and they bust them, and they, look, we did a great job. And I think what's happened is we've seen the conversion of the boogeyman now is the white militant guy.
Yeah.
White militant guy.
Yeah.
So that's what they're trying to push, and it's just, it's not really working all that successfully.
No.
I mean, it hasn't gone over like
it's harder and harder to push any single narrative. You just look at how we consume entertainment now.
Yeah.
It used to be, even 20, 30 years ago, it wasn't unusual for a show to, like a final episode or something, to have 40 million views.
Yes.
Now, it's huge if it got 10 million.
Yep.
Because there's so many options. There's so many different sources.
We're flooded.
Yeah, we're flooded. So, there's no longer those water cooler things for us to connect on. Mm-hmm. And not in the same way as...
Right.
Because we have so many options. So I think it's making harder for the governments to push their agenda. Because if you weren't listening on that channel, you missed it. You know?
That's exactly what Alan Moore says, you know?
Yeah.
We still practice magic to this day. And the ultimate magician is the advertisements, because they can make all of these people think the same thought at the same time. Mm. That's magic.
It's sleight of hand over in a global scale.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, and before, the control of media has definitely become privatized over time, right?
Oh, God.
So a lot more of the media used to be in government hands.
Yeah.
And now it's not necessarily the government per se
who's
pushing an agenda.
Rich
it's the people
barons.
In control, and it's the people with money.
Yeah.
Sometimes that overlaps.
It's the people that are lobbying millions of dollars.
Yeah, exactly. The lobbyists are very concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was taking a continuing education course recently, and one of the selling points for my profession, according to this continuing education course, is the lobbying power of our national professional organization.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, this is why I don't give you people money, because that's creepy.
absolutely.
I don't understand why you're happy about how that system works. I get that it's a fact of life, again.
Yeah,
however,
it's legalized.
If anything,
bribery.
We should be trying to change that.
It's legalized extortion.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely.
I remember hearing a different podcast. It was actually the Meat Eater podcast talking about how this new infrastructure bill has a section of money added to it from lobbying. And it's a pretty significant chunk of money added to it from lobbying that's going towards specific things for environmentalists. Specifically, a lot of, we've actually in the last few years, we've discovered how effective overpasses are for wildlife.
Yeah.
The ones
yeah.
they built
the crossings with the forest growing.
Yeah. yeah.
And this infrastructure bill has a lot of money in it for specific projects like that. And they were talking, he was talking in there about how it's like, so see, lobbying isn't such a bad thing sometimes. I'm like, okay, sure. We got 1/1,000th of the pie because yeah. this guy went in there and paid a politician 10 yeah. grand to add this part to his bill, and nobody cared enough to not argue want it. To sign the bill because of that particular section.
Yeah.
When you're talking about trillions of dollars, who gives a crap about $300 million?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, but no, stop that, guys. Stop it.
Yeah.
I mean, lobbying is not okay because you've got a drip out of the bottle. That is not okay.
Yeah.
When we are flushing the toilet, it's not okay that you reached in and grabbed a kernel of corn that you can plant next year. Yeah. It's not okay.
Well, you know, you talk about lobbying and all this kind of ties. We spend a lot on our military. It's how we've retained power for as long as we have.
Yeah.
But I think at some point we can relax that because... Look, we faced down the nuclear crisis. It's pretty much calm.
And we've become less and less efficient.
Yes. With,
even though we're spending more and more, we're becoming less and less
efficient. Well, they said that I was reading they're going to have to drop...
How we use our military.
And they're going to have to drop down the standards because they can't get people that are physically and fit enough to join like they used
yeah,
to. So that's crazy.
And the boomer generation is affecting everything.
Yeah.
We're looking at something like 63 million people retiring over the next 7 years.
Yeah.
And we just don't have the people to replace those.
Yeah.
And even if we did, they wouldn't bring to the table the same amount of experience and like training. Like we would have to rush.
We
to
have
get
far
those
more we
in.
Have far enough people.
Yeah.
To replace them, because obviously our population has expanded almost freaking exponentially. The problem is we don't have the people that want to do those jobs. I am in one of those jobs, and it's a job that is dying from lack of interest.
Yeah.
But is so necessary to how everybody lives their sedentary lifestyle that it's insane. Like, the amount of money I make per year... is crazy, and I'm at a good median. There is so much. I'm a tool maker, everybody. I work on plastic injection molds. I build them. Almost everything you use in your daily life
the case
has
on this phone.
Come from a plastic injection mold.
That Xbox case.
Yeah.
And everybody, there are so few people that even want to get into the trade, and I would say a vast majority, maybe even up to 90%, only want to get into the CNC section of this. They want to program the computers that allows a machine to do what it does and then spits the machine out, spits a part out. Well, you're talking about machines. Your car to be built has probably 40 or 50 different plastic injection molds that has to produce the parts that
the
is
plugs.
Put together, plugs, sensors,
door
panels, every single individual snap-on piece of that goes on your car has to be designed and created, tested, functioned, and sold to the companies who make the parts that go into your car. The problem with everybody going in CNC is, yes, I understand it's the computer part of it and we're pushing everything computer. I don't care how good of a machinist you are, and I've met some of the best in the country.
Right.
Some of the best. There is always some hands-on parts of it. You can give me every aspect of it made as, I mean, I'm working with stuff that is hundreds of thousandths.
On the measurements.
To the measurements. We work in, when I say something's within a thou, that's 1/1,000th of an inch.
Yep.
I'm working with stuff that sometimes has tolerance to half that, sometimes a quarter of that, usually a little more, sometimes within 2 or 3 thou.
Yeah.
Thousandths of an inch. and you're talking about something that comes off of a machine that you've programmed, that other people have programmed, mm-hmm. that have worked the shape of this thing within what its tolerances are. There are people who are hands-on that have to calibrate that machine to keep it within the tolerances that you're allowed to have. And once it comes out, there are people like me that have to work every single square inch of this piece of metal to function all together. This piece has to go into this piece, and all these pieces have to come together, and they have to slide and function into all this stuff. All that's hands-on. Mm-hmm. There is a whole world of money out there to be made for these people, and they're just dying off.
Yeah.
I can count on my fingers how many people under the age of 30 that I know personally that are in this trade. And that's not my company. I'm only in a small company. All the companies I know, fingers and probably have some left over, all the people I know that are within that field.
One of your coworkers out there, I think he said he worked 2 years straight without a day off because...
There's so much work and not enough people.
Yeah,
And you're talking baseline pay of $60,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can work your way up to, I mean, the way inflation's going and raises and stuff like that are going within the next year, I would imagine a competent tool maker making $75,000-$80,000 a year.
Yep. And
that is... You know, plenty to live on here.
Yep.
Yeah. More than enough.
And that I'm talking base fun. Pay. And most toolmakers, because we're so understaffed and overworked, you're talking, my base pay right now is somewhere in the neighborhood of $54,000. I made over $60,000 this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's, I work at a small shop with minimum overtime.
Yep.
You're big shops, you're talking over $100,000 a year just doing this. And that's the issue we run into with the modern generation, like he was talking about. We don't have the people to replace them. We do have the people to replace them. We've just gotten so focused on the technology part of everything that we don't understand that technology can only go so far.
What was the line? Learn to code?
Yeah.
Learn to code. And I was like, no, take up a trade. learn to plumb.
Yeah.
Yes.
There we go.
Please.
Yes.
All of these professions are having incredible shortages.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Hiring a contractor, it's not a joke.
Yeah.
I mean, people joke about it all day long on Facebook, but no, this is real.
Yeah.
You're not getting people training in the trades.
And they don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. They don't want to get dirty. They don't want to, I mean, I come home dirty and sometimes bloody.
Yeah,
you guys, and it can be dangerous. I'm not lying. We were talking earlier about I work with lathes.
Well, you got your shirt stripped off, right?
Yeah, I was working at a factory here in North Vernon. I won't mention names for legal purposes, but I was working in a plastic production company. We made parts for cars. I worked in the tool shop, and I was working on a piece, and I was working on a manual lathe. And I had my shirt loose, which normally isn't an issue. I keep my sleeves short and tight and keep my hair back. Everything's good there. I leaned down to push a drill chuck part of this lathe in, and the auto feed bar was running, and it caught the bottom of my shirt just right to start rolling it up. And... I know everybody at this table has been in a life-threatening situation.
Yep.
Yeah.
I started to stand up, and I hit a tether. Didn't understand what was going on at first. I started to do it. I went to stand up again, hit a tether. The second time, I looked down and saw what was happening. And anybody who's been in a life-threatening situation... At least with me and most people I've talked to, time slows down to such infinitesimal
it's wild.
Amount. Oh my God!
It's amazing how many things you can think in a millisecond.
The amount of time between the time that I realized that I was caught, the first time I stood up and thunk hit a tether, to the time that I was standing there with no shirt on was probably less than 3 seconds.
Yeah,
but. I hit that second one, looked down, and realized what happened, what was happening, and my shirt was getting pulled into this machine. I dropped to one knee and then stood up and threw my right arm into my shirt as hard as I could, like a Superman pose, coming from the knee like you're flying. Threw my shoulder into this, ripped the entire right side of my shirt off, and then did a 360 and spun out of the rest of my shirt. And by the time I stopped moving, my shirt was completely wrapped around this bar and going flap, 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 flap. But to me, that lasted a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, to see that would have just been like, whoop.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I've been working in this trade for 10 years.
Yep.
I've got a decade into my profession. That stuff doesn't happen. And as careful as I am, I hadn't realized some of my head left the auto feed on. But as careful as I am, this kind of goes back to that same thing I was talking about with gun safety earlier. It's a tool and it's complacency. I didn't have my shirt tucked in. Mm-hmm. I should have had my shirt tucked in. Normally, my shirt doesn't dangle down over there. I could go and work in that same tool room 1,000 more times and be in that same situation, and that never happened, but it only takes one time.
Yep.
And if I hadn't realized, and if I hadn't reacted in literally a quarter of a second the way that I reacted, if the shirt hadn't ripped, if I hadn't been 6'3" and 245 pounds,
yeah, you'd have been caught in that thing.
I'd have been sucked into that machine and screaming for help. Would I have died? Probably not.
But it would have sucked.
I would have been busted up. Would I have been ever the same again? No, definitely not.
Yeah.
So stay vigilant. But back to what we were talking about earlier. Do not, anybody out there, I don't care if you're 13 and listen to this, or 35 and listen to this, 45 and listen to this. If the way the economy is sitting right now, there's a lot of jobs out there, they're sitting stagnant, everybody's wanting all this more money and stuff like that. Look into a trade, man. It's never too late or too early to look into starting a trade. Bricklaying is a brutal, physical, demanding thing. I know several people that do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you do that brutal, physical, and demanding for about 10 years and get paid well for it, especially in the union. Even apprentices are making, probably making 22, 23 bucks an hour. I don't know.
But, and there's more work than they can.
But then you move up into that. You move from apprentice to plumbing, what's the next one up from?
Electricians.
Automotive.
If you can get into the union, but even if you can't even get into the union, all these trades have a great skilled trades. Yeah. You don't have to spend a bunch of money to go to college to get a degree to compete with 10,000 other people that have that same degree for the same 5 jobs.
And that's the problem. That's the original thing I brought up was we're going to have a worker shortage. This is going to continue. Our birth rate is dropping comparison to what it was.
We're
vastly overpopulated.
But it's going to leave holes in the economy, and where it's leaving them are in these jobs that haven't been promoted over the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. Plumbing, electrician, bricklaying, construction, all of that, all these old, excellent union jobs, we're going to be short plumbers. We're going to be short electricians.
Precious metal welding.
And there's going to be a lot of money to be made. Their wages are only going to increase because they're so
few. Because they have to.
Yeah. I currently know an electrician who's got about 25 years in it. And I was just talking to him on Facebook. He's making 60 some odd dollars an hour right now.
See, that's ridiculous.
They're so shorthanded. Yeah. Like, he has no help.
Who decided to become an electrician instead of go to college.
Yeah.
He has been an electrician now for almost 20 years. He is not a line worker anymore. He controls the grid.
Yeah.
He works about 150 days a year.
Yeah.
That makes over 100
because
grand.
Because it's a stressful job.
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he makes well over 100
grand. By the way, how many lights were there?
Oh, I don't know.
We need to find out. What if we won?
We did not win.
Oh, no.
But so he also does an outstanding Christmas lights display.
Yes,
right.
That
right.
is epic.
That's cool as hell.
Yeah.
Featured on the news, but then will also like come over and help me out when I have an outlet that isn't working properly. So like, and because he has that leisure time to do it.
Yeah.
But he, you know, he made that decision. He had good grades.
Yeah.
He, you know, his parents were encouraging him you know, like, you could do college if you wanted.
But there's not always a necessity for it. No. Artistic degrees. A lot of people out there are artistic, and they want to call go to college to do something artistic with it. Let me tell you what. When I work with my hands and create something that is bringing this piece to life, there's a lot of art to that. There's a lot of subtlety. And mine isn't the only one. There's a lot of positions in a lot of these skilled trades that have a lot of art to them.
Yep. Welding.
Welding is so beautiful when it's done right.
Yes.
They've said that any job you have where you see the completion of your work, even if it's road work or building trades and all that, has a lot higher satisfaction overall. Guys that work in factories that never see, let's just say make a part mundane every day, it's never ending. Yeah, it actually causes some issues.
I think that's where that going postal thing comes from. It's the mundane day in, day out without any resolution to your job.
Humans like finality. Yes, we like everything cut and dry. Mm-hmm. We like beginnings and endings.
I mean, everything does. You look at the average predator and it's just, it goes from lazing around to its goal focused on the next meal and the next hunt.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't stop until it has the next hunt, and then it's lazing around. There's only goal, and there's only finality, and then there's rest in the middle.
I feel like we are we operate best as task-based creatures.
Yeah.
And that's why setting a routine is so difficult and takes so much work on our part.
But it is one of the best ways to live a healthy life. It has to be habit.
It's also one of the reasons why we're in such bad shape with our sedentary lifestyle and our canteen culture that we live in.
Yes.
Everything's so instantaneous that we don't have to. It's just at a whim we get to do what we want to do.
So, Justin, I know we talked a little bit, and actually we dropped this from the last one, but I think it fits in the Outliers episode we're going to do. I remember you were talking about Mark Twain.
Yeah.
Mark Twain's got some really interesting history that we're going to touch on.
One of my personal heroes.
Yes. He's a wild man.
Essentially was the first stand-up comedian.
Yes.
Was banned from several southern states because he would go on these talking tours. He's actually much more famous in his lifetime for his talking tours than his writing. And he'd go on these talking tours and talk about real life. And he had an entire bit he did about masturbation. And this is at a time when the modern science of the day said that female masturbation was a myth. A female orgasm
was a myth.
And he literally was standing up in front of crowds going, "Everyone masturbates. There's nothing wrong with you." This is right after he wrote a fantastic book, if you've never read it, Letters to the Earth, about an angel who gets sent in exile for pissing God off to Earth. And none of the other angels know exactly where Earth is, but he's writing back to angels that he's friends with, talking about how weird humans are and how our prayer rituals are so strange and like, who is this God they're talking about? Like, we've got it all wrong. But yeah, he's just an interesting guy, and was banned from several states for talking about masturbation, which is my kind of people.
Right. I'm definitely want to talk about Palahniuk. He's a people watcher. He's the god of people watchers.
He's an interesting character.
He was.
I have a bunch. I would like to touch on Nino de Enclos, a French. She's something else. Her life's real deep. But there's a lot of authors that have inspired me. And authors have always kind of been, they've always been kind of outliers. I think you have to feel like an outsider to want to write about your observations.
Yep.
I've written my entire life, and I know that stems from that feeling of always being a throwaway kid, that outsider mentality.
Yep.
And there's a bunch from Bourdain to Hunter S. Thompson to Haruki Murakami. I can't think of the gentleman's name now. I just read a book by him. He's a Japanese author that literally committed harikari.
He did it for
actually tried to bring back the emperor of Japan in the 50s and committed harikari
because
he failed. He took over a radio station, I believe, and committed harikari live on the air. So there's all kinds of interesting outliers out there.
Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm. Hitchcock was interesting. There's a bunch of them.
Yeah. So, guys, we're going to have a real good one there.
I've got a list, and it's ever-growing. So.
I feel like I'm going to need to come back, because so far none of you have named a single female.
Oh, no, we did.
Except for that one.
Nina.
Oh, my God.
We have some. We have some.
But you will appreciate her.
Well, you know.
So,
yeah.
So
Nina. How much do you guys know about Agatha Christie?
Marie Curie would be an excellent one.
Mary Shelley. Her husband was supposed to be the famous author, and she said, watch this, and wrote one of the greatest first horror stories, Frankenstein or the new Prometheus. She's absolutely brilliant. But Ninon, why I love her so much, there's so little known. Like, she's not well known. There was a play written about her 100 years ago, but she, there's never been a book written about her. I actually plan to write a book about her someday. But she was, you're talking 1820s, she was 80 when she died, and I believe she died in the 1840s, but her kind of prime was like 1800 to 1840. And she's low-level aristocrat in Paris. She was about to be married off to some man she didn't know, and that can only happen if she's a virgin. So she went to this well-known playboy and said, ruin me.
And, okay, you just described the beginning of, like, 22% of romance novels.
It gets better, because she said, ruin me, and then she set out. She said, I will never have a man control my life. And she became... Her mom got pissed because she got ruined. She no longer had her maidenhead, so sent her to a nunnery. She had impressed the Queen of Sweden so much that she rescued her from a nunnery and moved her into her court. She became the highest paid courtesan in all of Sweden, came back to France. Literally, King Henry at the time became obsessed with her because her sex and her beauty was said to be killed. Cure illnesses.
So he sent her. Cured something.
You fuck so good, you're working back.
He sent the equivalent of like $30 million in gold for her to come live with him. He was so fascinated. She sent her cousin, who was poor. He had never laid eyes on her. He didn't know the difference. This girl lived the rest of her life in his court.
Oh,
had a great
God.
Life. She kept the money.
Oh, my God!
Then she started, so the salon in Paris. I would love to go back to the 1800s in Paris, because the salon was... It was every walk of life. They'd come and just have intellectual discussion. Well, she led these salon discussions about the clitoris and the female orgasm. Mm-hmm. She literally taught classes on how to give females orgasms. Women got in for free. Men had to pay. She wrote several treatises on the clitoris.
I just found my side hustle.
She's
if
amazing.
You wanted that to work out in favor of women, it should have been the other way. Men get in for free and women have
well,
to pay. You want every man possible to figure out how to do that shit.
Well, she's just amazing. So she hired late in life, in her 60s, she hired this young Jewish accountant that had really impressed her. He'd been to one of her classes. She really liked this kid, so she hired him. She said, I want to secure my wealth. Like, I want to never have to rely on a man. She never, even men she fell in love with, she never spent more than 90 days with them, because she did not want to be owned. And at that time, love
after 90 days, they put a stamp on you. Yeah. And that was that.
Well, so she told this accountant, she said, if you can secure my wealth, I'll leave it all to you when I finally die. I think she's in her 50s. And, well, she got well into her 80s. She knew she was going to die. Told him she's going to leave all of the money. He'd just had a son. And she said, I'm going to leave you all this money. Spend it on education and books on your son. That son grew up to be Voltaire. Voltaire would not have happened without her influence. He had been around her his entire childhood. He was like 11 when she died, so she had a huge impact on his life. And she made his dad very wealthy. He sent him to the best schools. He did exactly like she said. Amazing, amazing human in history, and so overlooked. Like, she's so... There, we know a lot about her life because she was like in the newspapers. She was doing things that people were scandalized by. Like, you don't talk about the clitoris in public. She's amazing.
My original college major was French literature, and I like never.
She's amazing. I'm probably butchering her name, but it's Ninon de Lenclos. I'll show you.
So post it. We'll post it to the group.
It'll be easy. Yeah.
And then my controversial woman that I've brought it up many times is Esther Villar.
Yeah.
Esther Villar was an extreme outlier on purpose.
Yeah.
She was kind of like a stand-up comedian herself in that she would just be grating and over the top. And she actually apologized for that later and said she wishes they wouldn't have taken her angst so literally. Yeah. But yeah. So guys, I want to leave off with this last thing. You're talking about, you know, the spending and the government and stuff. Now, there's a book by David McGowan. I've brought this book up before. It's called Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon.
Yeah.
Laurel Canyon, Covert Ops, and the Dark Heart of the Hippie Dream. Now, this book goes into kind of how deeply the government and that money was involved in the music of the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Lots of generals were living in the valley, running with the producers and stuff.
And that ties right into like the great Kool-Aid acid test, Ken Kesey on the West Coast, and then Timothy Leary on the East Coast, literally getting from the CIA, getting LSD-25, and then being arrested for it. The exact same shit they had been sold the night before. Literally, they didn't pass the law making LSD illegal until like 11 o'clock at night. They arrested them at 6 o'clock in the morning. Yep. Yeah, it's crazy.
So we'll get into all that. That's interesting.
Those are two outliers. I think Albert Hoffman's an outlier that we need to talk about in celebrating Bicycle Day.
Yep.
I don't know if anyone here celebrates Bicycle Day. I try to every year.
I know bears like it.
Albert Hoffman, he accidentally created LSD, and he tested it on himself and rode his bike home. He didn't have a driver's license, and he rode his bike home for 8 hours. And he said it was the most beautiful day of his entire life, and that became Bicycle Day.
Nice.
That was the first trip.
So this is the task, guys, after this free dive. If you would, Justin, we're going to post up this lady's name. You can try to pronounce it.
Yeah.
We'll see how we do.
I'll show it to you.
Of anyone that you think is just an intriguing outlier of a human being, this can be someone that's really small, maybe someone from your hometown even.
Yeah.
We don't care. Post it up and we'll talk about it. We might even dive into it when we start looking. So, again, folks, we're long in the tooth on this one, but you know what? We've been talking about giving you a little more content because we're doing such long gaps in here.
That's so, what I thought.
They're debating the full spelling now.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very odd. There's some uppercase and lowercase in weird places.
So, it's been a minute, but Ninon de l'Enclos would be...
That was just beautiful.
But like Ninon is actually a diminutive. It's a nickname.
That's her nickname.
So it's like...
But that's how she was known. She kind of had one name in her lifetime.
Or something for...
She kind of had one name in her lifetime. That's what she was known for. Was Ninon.
Yeah.
Amazing. Ninon. Amazing human being. 200 years before her time.
Yeah.
She really was.
So...
And yeah, bring us people that you think would have been throwaway kids.
Yes.
You know, like people that would enjoy
deep
the dumpster
history
dive.
Throwaway kids would be fantastic.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Just anyone throughout history or even in the modern era that you think needs a little light shined on or a little research shined on would be excellent.
Yep. And we'll do it here, guys. So, hey, everyone, thank you again for tuning in. So just stay cool to everybody and keep on dumpster diving.
Praise God.